This interview was recorded on Valentine's Day, February 14th, 1991, and it's with J.B. Sims, James B. Sims, in his new apartment in Robinwood Living Center, they call it, out on Robbins Road. The other voice that you'll hear in the background is his wife, Lucy, and J.B. is presently 93 years old, and at last Monday's Rotary meeting, he was given a Paul Harris Award that you'll hear us refer to, as well as being recognized for his long service with the Board of Light and Power, employed in 1937 and retired in 63, and was forced to retire, as you'll notice too, because of his age, 65. All in all, he had a remarkable career, and still has a very active mind, as you will see in the interview. So, at this point, let's pick up that interview. Where was Glenn was going? Where?
He went down to Florida for a month.
We didn't know. This was all cooked up between Glenn and Lucy.
Yeah,
they were trying to keep me in the dark about it. See,
he didn't know a thing about it till the very day before, and then he said, if Glenn was here, I'd call him up and tell him, not going.
You mean this Rotary thing was?
Yeah.
He got nervous.
Excuse me, I'm full of slurl.
All right. Can we help you?
I can make it a call.
Give it to me, honey. I'll sit it right over here.
I'm pretty mobile except in the back.
I'll just pull it over here. He fell down, you know, trying to help me.
I understand that, yeah.
I fell out of the bed. We sleep in little twin beds here.
Yeah.
We're not used to that at home.
Yeah.
And I turned over, and I couldn't get up. I couldn't get off my feet. My legs were just like rubber. And he tried to help me, and when he did, he lifted me, and he said he felt something snap right in the back. And the doctors had an x-ray made, and they said he cracked his fifth vertebrae. And nothing you could do about it. You can't heal it up.
We've had two incidents like this. One, she fell coming out of the restaurant over here. And so my husband was swimming, and she pulled me, and I went down, and I had to have a hip operation.
Didn't break it, though.
Yeah, it cracked me around the edge of it, this Dr. Slovey said.
Well, we survived that, and then this thing happened since we've been over here.
Yeah.
Since Christmas.
That's a bedroom in there, hospital beds, and she's slid off on one of them and couldn't get off. And very foolishly, I tried to overdo myself and pull her up.
All we had to do was just ring a button, and the nurses were here just like that. They came in a minute. He finally rang the bell, and I said, you better just push the button, honey. So when he did, there was two nurses here just in 5 minutes.
Good service.
Oh, yeah.
Darn good
service.
They
were wonderful.
Oh, yes.
I heard that about this.
Done very well.
Yeah.
This is quite an institution.
Yeah, you bet.
It's one that's needed between being well and staying home, maybe have help, and a nursing home.
Yes.
Not a nursing home specifically.
Right.
They have overlapping of facilities. They have a couple of nurses here and other facilities who've been serving medicine and doing housework. So we're getting kind of lazy, and we keep having hopes that we can get out. That's the reason I kept dragging on, going back to Rotary. I think I'd get back to Rotary. But then these things kept happening. She's had a pacemaker put in here.
They said they thought the reason I had those dizzy spells was because I might have an inner ear infection, that minor disease or whatever they call it.
Right, yes.
The whole world just goes round and round. You can see everything moving, actually.
Sure.
And I says, catch me, JB, catch me, I'm going to fall. That's when he first broke his hip. And he tried to catch me, and I just knocked him down. His two hands just stuck it out right in front of him, and I hit his hand, and down I went.
Seems
that's when he
odd
broke his hip.
Two incidents.
I know it.
Your impulse is to do something.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
I'm starting crying about it.
Yeah, right.
Looked like I was trying to kill him both times. I wasn't.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, next month we've been married 68 years.
68 years,
yeah. Think of that. Yeah. When I say that, that seems like a long time when you think about it. 68 years is about the... I didn't expect to live that long, but I did.
I heard Henny Youngman, the comedian, uh-huh. One of his lines is, I've loved the same woman for 68 years. When my wife finds out about it, she's going to be mad.
That's a pretty good joke.
Isn't that cute? That's pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
68 years. Now, where were you married?
Where? We married in Dallas, Texas.
Was that your home?
That's our home. That's where I was born.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was reminiscing a little. No one changes up.
Yeah.
I remember you say your father was quite interested in municipal ownership.
Well, he was with Consumers Power.
Oh. Yeah.
He was with the electric meter department in Jackson.
I see.
And maybe that was the connection.
That's the connection I'm thinking about.
But he,
I know it was utility work.
Oh, yeah.
Utility.
Right. Yeah.
He was in the... Now, Jackson was the Consumers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. I'm just sitting here after talking and thinking about it. I knew it was something to do with utility work.
Let's see. If you're 93, you were born about the same year my dad was. 98, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
98. Uh-huh. And good heavens, Texas was a state.
No.
But New Mexico wasn't, and Arizona wasn't.
No. The little town he was born in is not even on the map. It's way out in the mountains, out in the west, Texas.
It's a ranch town. But, a lot of my background in utility work was both privately owned and publicly owned, that is, city or citizen owned. So I had both, and a lot of it was with properties in Texas that were associated with electric bond share bankers in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Texas Power and Light, Texas Electric Service, Texas Public Utilities, and they were scrambling for territory down there. And Samuel Insull from Chicago was quite active in buying up little utilities down there. So, and I have had, fortunately, I've had experience on both sides of the fence.
Yeah.
One of the big utilities and authorized to have a crew throw lines across the city limits at night and all that pretty since when they were competitive. On the other hand, the same city, Austin, Texas, state capital, I had done work with a private utility, a private engineering firm, with a citizen-owned utility. Austin's quite a city even in those days, state capital.
Mm-hmm.
But I was authorized to nobody less than the chairman of the board of directors of the Texas Power and Light Company to throw a line across the city limits.
Yes, right.
I thought when I got up to Grand Haven in Michigan that we'd be over those things.
Yeah.
In the Wild West, you know.
Sure.
But I had an experience later on up here of doing some engineering work for the city of Sebring, town of Sebring, helped me up a financial when Detroit Edison worked all night long so they could testify and build on a substation to set limits so they could testify they could serve them and trying to keep them from buying another generator.
Yeah.
So I wasn't getting out of the Wild West from that standpoint, but of course
where did you go to school?
Here's something. Here's this whole education.
Oh, okay.
That's his itinerary. He made that for Glenn.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he asked me those questions about going out.
Yes, I still don't see where you got your education, though.
Texas A&M.
Oh, here it is, of course, Texas A&M.
Texas State.
School of Law.
He didn't go very long.
I didn't. I got went long enough that I could learn how to write a contract.
But you're from Texas State. That's where you got your electrical training.
Yeah. Okay. Texas State in the Army, and Texas A&M after the Army.
Oh, I see.
And of course, they're a little different. One of them is a military ROTC, Texas A&M.
You bet.
And Texas State is the University of Texas.
Yeah. And then in the Army, you were in the Air Corps.
Yes, 817th Aerial Squadron.
And where was that? Where did you do your training?
Well, mostly in Texas. I enlisted up north. They shipped me back to Texas.
Huh.
And I spent a lot of time in the university down there teaching pilots communications.
Okay.
We ramble around quite a bit when I reminisce.
But that's where you learn how to fly, isn't it?
No, yes, but I didn't get the bug. I got the bug as a teenager because the editor of the local newspaper had bought parts from France to build up a Blériot monoplane, and I worked with him on that.
That would have been 1910, 11, 12, somewhere in there?
I was about 16 or 17 years old, I guess. But then I joined the Air Corps, and they shipped me back to Texas. I was working in Ogden, Utah, in a railroad shop, waiting to see what they were going to do. First, under 21, I joined the Canadian Air Force, and they gave me a permit that if the U.S. went into the fracas, that I could use that and transfer it to the U.S. So it did, and I was out in Utah working in a railroad shop. So then they shipped me back to Texas. I didn't know where I was going. And then I went to ground school down there at the university, and then they found out I knew a little about radio, and they had me working on that most of the time.
Was it the Morse code, or was it communication? Mm-hmm.
The code.
Code, okay. In
those days, I didn't have much voice, you
know. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I had tinkered with ham radio a lot, and that's how I come to get tied in. So I did some flying in about 817th Aerial Squadron down out of Houston in San Antonio, but I didn't get overseas.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness.
But you had soloed.
What do you think?
You had soloed.
Oh, yes.
Not
in the Army. You didn't get.
Okay.
He kept thinking every minute he was going to.
Yeah, I soloed.
Overseas, you know.
Well, I came here, I mentioned it the other day, I think. I came here and flew a World War type airplane in here.
A Beechcraft Travel Air.
That's right, Travel Air.
Yeah, I remember you telling me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was invited to speak before the Rotary Club as a newcomer.
And that would have been 29?
Well, that was 37.
Oh, 37, okay. All right.
That was the fall of 37. And I didn't know they knew if I was an aviation bug. It leaked out anyway. And I thought they wanted me to talk about the power plant. And I said, what are you going to talk about? What shall I talk about? He said, we understand you had some aviation experience. How about talking about that? So I did, I guess. And later on, I got wrapped up in this building, this airport.
Sure. Here. Now, when you arrived here, was the airport still over on the other side of the river over by construction?
Oh, they had just discontinued it.
Uh-huh.
Over by, okay. Toward Ferrisburg. So
right.
But the reason that I was talking to the mayor and some of the council members one day, and they had taken some funds that had been contributed by the electric light plant to bring in some industry. And they were haggling, they didn't know how, it wasn't a gross enough amount to distribute it among a bunch of people. And they were talking about that, and I said, why don't you build your own airport out here? When I came here, I had to fly into Muskegon, mm-hmm. which is not great, but at the same time as the principal. And said, why don't you set up an airport and put industry around there? Then? Well, right away they bought the idea, and they got a hold of Ted Bolt. And Ted, not being an aviation enthusiast, but he's trying to do something for the town, he took it over and got the rights to a lot of property out there. And he was a great booster for that little industrial airport.
I know he was, yeah.
So, well, we got busy trying to. And I guess it's worked out all right. It's been a big help to the community. Mm-hmm. So that was, well, I came here flying an OX Traveler water-cooled engine. And
that was an OX-5?
OX-5. Mm-hmm. I'm a life member of the OX-5 Club.
Sure.
You were at 10.
Is that what that is?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's your OX-5, yeah. I wondered why that was. Oh, sure it is. Yeah, I see it.
No, you never forget those things. You get enthusiastic about it. You get enthusiastic about it, and you just keep going and going. There's a time when they ran out of somebody and they couldn't pay anybody to manage the airport, so the council appointed me airport manager. Well, portfolio or
something. Yeah. Portfolio is right.
It was a great experience. But I'll never forget how surprised I was that they knew I flew in the club.
Yeah, that was an open cockpit.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I'm amazed that you didn't have a stagger wing.
No, yeah, I would have if I had the denario as a considerable money.
You bet, that was
But I had a, next thing to it was a low-wing Bonanza. I had a low-wing Bonanza for a long time.
Was that closed cockpit?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes,
yeah.
Uh-huh. It's a V-type tail group. And
of course. I was thinking of...
I had that several years around here.
Oh, absolutely. And you bought that about 46, 7, somewhere?
Probably. Uh-huh. I had two different ones. One with a more powerful engine. Mm-hmm. I used that to get around over the country when I had to pull out and go on business for myself because it's age old 65. I had to leave the service of the city.
Yeah.
I'd been doing a little moonlighting around for other towns anyway, so I didn't have anything.
So it worked out.
It worked out. I just read about Tacoma, Washington. I had a chance to go to Tacoma, Washington, and a lot of places like that. But by that time, I'd gotten interested in this location because it's a nice little town to raise a family in.
That is. How many children did you have?
Two. Son, we lost our son about 2.5-3 years ago. He was an engineer, like
he was 60 years old.
That's young.
Just ready to retire.
But I mean, this thing, even though I had heard about sneak preview, kind of persuaded her to tell me a little bit what they were talking about.
Oh, this one last Monday, with your Paul Harris.
Then I got fraught with worry about whether or not I could make it down there. I worked fairly well with a cane, but not too well.
Yeah.
And you get emotionally upset, you know.
Sure. You did beautifully.
I think you looked real good on the picture.
Yes.
And then my daughter down in, who's married to another mechanical engineer down, and she teaches. She's a reading specialist, I guess they used to call her. Anyway, she got into the picture and called me on the telephone and pleaded with me and prayed myself and go ahead. And
you can do it, Daddy. You can do it. And just 2 hours of your time is all it takes. And after that, you'll be so happy you did.
I'll tell you, the Rotary Club and the board outdid themselves on tremendous.
It really did.
That was very
nice. I never anticipated anything like this.
This is what the Lord gave you.
Yes. I recognize it. Sure.
Just pays you to live longer, I guess, with all its handicaps.
When did you tell me about the first colored fountain that we had in town?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You were involved with that.
Yeah, I had just gotten out of Texas A&M, and I went to work for the Dallas Power and Light Company, and they wanted to start you out in those days as a young engineer doing the labor and then. Well, I had too much electrical experience as a teenager to start at the bottom, so I quit them and went to work for a small engineering firm in Dallas. They said, well, come on in and make yourself at home. If you want to work with us, we can't pay you right now, but we've got a job coming up where a gentleman's going to pay for an electric fountain. And we need, you can come on and sit on the drafting board and work out the figures.
This is during the Depression, too, wasn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
1922, I guess.
32.
Anyway, we took a one that had been built by the General Electric Company in World's Fair and scaled it down to dollars and cents. The old gentleman was willing to donate to build us right downtown in Dallas. So we built, in those days you didn't immerse lamps in water like you can today, so we had to design it around a GE sketch that showed a basement with a rotating color wheel in there.
Mm-hmm.
With floodlights that were kept dry, but they went up through the color wheel, then through the water. The only thing, and it was a beautiful fountain, the only thing, it was too close to downtown and we didn't have the potential you have here of dark background.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's still there and I understand still working. I talked to a friend of mine a few years ago and he said he stopped there especially to see that's right across from the Union Terminal.
Yeah.
But it's downtown where there's a lot of lights and it doesn't show up as nice as our mutual friend built over here on
Dewey Hill.
Dewey Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So I went with some fellows including several people, you know, and went over there and we looked at portable fountain and it was done over in Cresson was sponsored the thing and I guess he was mayor in those days.
Yes, right.
Bill. Anyway, we came back and I worked with a group on that and we used a lot of equipment out of the old waterworks plant. Pumps.
Yes.
Machinery.
Right.
Bill has did a marvelous job sponsoring that. You know?
Oh, he sure did. Yeah, he's a great.
He's worked hard at it.
Great promoter, I'll tell you.
So that's.
But you, when you came here, then you did something with it. Did you build this fountain here?
No, I did the work. The little one in the.
Exactly. Yeah.
In the city park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were about
the fountain was there, but it didn't have any lights in it, and we electrified it.
All right, that's what it was.
They
took stuff out of
where they had hot springs, didn't they, David? Didn't they go there and get hot springs water?
What'd you say?
Isn't that the place in the park where the people went and got bottles of water for their health?
No.
That's before we came here.
Yeah, that would have been where the old Kent Bank is now.
A long time,
No, that was sharp before.
That was 1870.
We have a lot of laughs since then. People came here to see the magnificent fountain over in Dewey Hill. And they got into this little fountain over there and got That did a pretty good job for itself because it was dark.
Sure.
That background.
I was impressed when I first came here. I remember it.
Whereas you have a natural setting here for this big fountain.
Yes. Oh, perfect.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Well, I tell you, I've had an interesting experience, as I tried to say the other day, and had trouble voicing it. If you're going to go to work for the public, you've got to have a need for your services.
Yep.
And then when there is a need and you suggest these things, you've got to find people that will go along with you and do this and believe in you. And that's Alma McCall. I mentioned the other day. I didn't mention his name, but he was the editor of the newspaper, and he thought we were going to spoil things by building our power plant on the island.
Oh, yes. Right.
So I spent hours and hours arguing with him about it and trying to convince him. But, well, I couldn't see it because I had worked in three or four petrochemical plants that generated their own chemical plants. And I knew that they had to spread out and have acreage and different conditions. So they appointed me to meet with somebody that was interested, and I later built a chemical plant north of here, beyond Muskegon somewhere.
Oh, not Dow. Or Hooker. Hooker Chemical?
Yeah, I believe that was.
Way up in Ludington, and, well, it could have been in Whitehall, too.
Whitehall.
Yeah.
Anyway, I faithfully showed them the property, and they just shook their head and said, no, we wouldn't be interested. Well, then after that, I knew we had to do something. That's a story, too, about it. Because we were outgrowing the diesels. We had to do something, run out of space. Anyway, then's when I took it on myself to walk into the board one night and tell them this is what we ought to do. And I didn't know if they were going to throw me out or not, but they bought it. That started the plant on it. Because you had to have, take, for example, I had the experience with the two bankers here on buying the first diesel engine that we had to buy after I came here because we were running out of power.
Now, there was only one, or were there two when you got here?
Sherwood. Oh, the diesels, they had three diesels here. They made in America. They were not German diesel. They were American diesel.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as I get ahead of my story, because Hike Yonker was president of the board then, and he had to have an appendix operation. They didn't have a hospital. They had the old
Hatton Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Hatton Hospital.
Yeah.
Anyway, he said, hi, how are you coming? I've been here a few months. And I said, all right, but you're going to have to cut your rates outside the city limits because consumers are going to move in on you. We can't do that. Can't cut our rates. Finally, he thought of that, and he said, well, why don't you give us some figures? Well, I did, and they bought it.
Yeah.
And we immediately cut our rates. They were charging 10% more just outside the city limits, and they had quite a rural electrification when I came. So when we cut our rates, we had to introduce promotional rates to build up the load. And so we did. Mostly it was water heating. There's no way to heat the water. There's no gas in those days.
Sure.
So we put in a special rate, 1 cent per kilowatt hour, and all of a sudden the merchants picked it up and ran with it.
Uh-huh.
And sold a lot of water heaters, and we put in time switches and built up the load. Then when we built up the load too much, we had to buy another generator. So I sit down and worked up some figures and sketches and took it over to Sherwood Sr. And I said, I'd like to talk to you about this. And he said, well, he called Bud, his
son
in. Mm-hmm. He said, looks all right to us, and how about financing it with the other bank and probably through some banks. And so we did, and we paid for it in 3 or 4 years. It was phenomenal because business is booming. When you put the promotional rates in there, you build up load. You got to have volume, and that was the handicap.
Were you making a profit at those reduced rates?
A profit.
Yeah.
And when I came here, the only gas here was artificial gas. Remember the little artificial gas plant?
I don't remember it. I've read about it, though. Yeah.
So when I bought the diesel engines, and when I bought the diesel engines, I say I because I was supposed to do that.
Uh-huh.
I bought engines that would burn natural gas. I tailed up to Detroit back and forth to get the gas company to build in here. They are already to Grand Rapids, but they hadn't got in here yet.
Uh-huh.
They needed volume to pay them to make the pipeline in here. Sure, we lost some electricity sales on because eventually they use gas to heat
the
water.
Yeah.
But it was a good move on our part because the gas was competitive with heavy oil at that time. It was burning. Mm-hmm. The fellow right here in this institution that was an oil broker, I got acquainted with him since I've been here.
Huh.
He was an oil broker and he was living in Grand Rapids, and we bought tons and tons of heavy oil in those engines. We were burning, even in those days, we were burning 10,000 gallons a day. That's carload.
Gee.
Freight carload. But then we switched over to gas, and the gas was cheaper to generate than the oil, even the skimmed oil in those days.
Mm.
See, we had to doctor up the oil, ran through centrifuges. And, it was a good move because we got gas in here and the town started using gas. You had to. Well, I still think that if I learned anything, accomplished anything, as I said, tried to say the other day, you got to have a need for it, have a need for your experience, and then get people to administer what you suggest, what you recommend. So I've always been grateful to, thank you.
Hi.
I've always been grateful to the public for being open-minded.
Yeah.
You go into some communities and if there's somebody that's not open-minded, imagine walking down there and talking about building a power plant on an island. You got to be young and
and aggressive.
And this building down there, you know, this building that we built down on the waterfront as a service.
Oh yes,
building.
Right. You bet. Did that turn out beautifully?
I went down there and talked to them about this dump called what do they call that? Is a little old concrete back of the green mill.
You call it the graveyard.
Graveyard or something like that.
Where they used to store the old trucks.
Service line foreman, case races, and those people.
Where was it? The green mill.
It was in, you know where the green mill was? In the back.
Downtown.
Down back of that. Oh,
back
there.
Of that was a little concrete huddle and vacant lot, and that was the headquarters for our electric line department. Trucks and any equipment we could afford. Anyway, I talked to the board about it, and they said, well, they give me a hard luck story about financing to get on. I got accustomed to that, as most people do working for the public. Well, they said, okay, we'll allocate how much just for the steel to get started. You're going to pay it out of revenue, of course.
Uh-huh.
Well, I okayed X number of dollars to buy the steel, but instead of buying corrugated sheet metal like they want to put up a barn, that's exactly what they had in mind.
Uh-huh.
Wouldn't that have been a dandy down there next to the American Legion?
Hmm. How did you talk them out of that?
I didn't. I just went ahead and bought structural steel.
Okay.
They okayed that after he bought it.
Uh-huh.
And I know one of them said to me one day, he said, what is that you're putting on top of that building?
Wessel said that.
Wessel, yeah. Yeah.
Was it Dan?
No, senior, the old man.
The old man.
Oh, okay.
I said, well, you know, we're going to have trucks in there and an office and other facilities, and we need it for ventilation. Okay, he says. We're about a kind of a halfway truth.
Yeah.
Actually, we wanted the parents.
Well, and listen, that it was such a gorgeous building, and of course you know how it turned out. The Coast Guard said, that's a beautiful building for us.
Yeah.
It all worked out just great.
I remember we worked so hard to put that building in there. We built it on the brick and structural steel and put a crane in there and everything else.
Yeah, yeah. And you'd never guess that was a...
what it was built for.
Exactly,
yeah.
Sure. Beautiful facility. Oh, with the cupola on top.
The little thing that they... Yep,
forgive
them on the top, really made the building.
Absolutely.
Sure it is.
Your neighbor, your former neighbor that ran the grocery store next to you.
Erickson.
Yeah.
Sure.
He was in a vulnerable position, and Mrs. Hatton came by and said, now that's a beautiful building, and it's too beautiful for the board to have it. You should build something over on the island, a sheet metal building, and move them over there and turn this over for a...
Youth Center.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
Well, I like to have a feel. I don't know, here goes all this work. But it didn't go over. So I was long gone by the time they gave it away to them.
Yeah, and look where the Youth Center went, right above it.
Yeah.
The YMCA is right up there.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
It takes a lot of... Nobody but... Not all towns would be as receptive as some of these ideas that you do.
You know, one thing I was trying to, in going through this Coast Guard thing and getting into lighthouses, I was trying to figure out, would it have been possible back in those days, lighthouses had oil and wicks, and that was their source of light. They electrified in 1918, or that's when they were authorized to electrify. But we had our own power plant here.
Yeah.
It would have made sense to me if, and bulbs were available before 1918.
Yeah.
I'll bet that our lighthouse was electrified before that, but I can't find any way to prove
it. I really don't know.
Yeah.
That's before my time.
Yeah, that would have been before your time.
As I say, you've got to find a need for somebody that has had a little experience or a lot of experience,
mm-hmm.
diversified experience, which fortunately I thought I had quite a bit, both publicly owned, privately owned, corporate owned.
Sure.
And with, I worked on one, at least three petrochemical plants that generated their own power. One in Corpus Christi, Texas, one in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and a big one, carbon carbide, over where I came from here, 3 years.
Carbon carbide. Carbon
carbide.
So with you just, no matter how dumb you are, you pick up a lot of information. And the main thing that I found is that to generate power, as I tried to say the other day, it's not a manufacturing concern, it's a processing outfit. You take different types of fuel energy and convert it to electrical energy.
That's a good point, yeah.
And you've got to sell that at the lowest price at the time that you can generate it the cheapest, and you've got to have rates that fit. I did a lot of rate work with places like South Haven. Glenn was up here talking to me about it. He said that there's a bulletin that South Haven is going to spend a terrific amount of money to they had several years ago, they shut down their generating plant. It was a old-fashioned steam plant down on the waterfront. And I did a lot of rate work for them, and also did a lot of distribution work for them. Some of it was moonlight. And I said, I don't see how on earth they could spend that much money, because I'm familiar with the distribution system. And they had some capable fellows there at that time. They left and went somewhere else. That's the trouble with a lot of municipals. I had to retire at 65. I was mad.
But that's mandatory.
Right down in Holland, you could work until you're 70, so they offered me their job to move down there 20 miles.
Is that right?
I thought, talking to myself, why do that? I was off in Tacoma, Washington. I even made a trip out in Arizona to talk to him about the job out there. Financially, I'd been a lot better because it was a state institution they were organizing, and long story, but I got acquainted around here, and people have been good to me. My children were happy in school, and I just...
Yeah, well, this is home.
All I had to do was move down and open up an office, and right away I got the first job was to build another power plant at, similar to this first one, at Marquette. Had to put in the same type of equipment down there, and didn't have any trouble finding jobs. It was challenging because every town had its different problem. For instance, one of the things we did here when we first came here is put waste heat boilers on the exhaust of the diesels for heating the building. And that had been done before, but there was not many people doing it. They're still down there.
Are those big muffler-looking things around the stacks?
No, they're in the building.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Close to the exhaust.
So it'd be like a manifold heater.
Yeah.
Sure.
It actually generated steam. But we couldn't sell that. Now, if that had been an industrial plant like carbon carbide, we use the exhaust there, the heat, and process work. So that's what consumers is doing up north. They're using the exhaust and making steam and selling the steam. We couldn't sell our own city the steam. I guess they'd give us credit for it. But, they couldn't use much, but we heated our own buildings. And so after that, I did a study for Zeeland. Well, they got a house full of diesels down there, some of which I helped them with. And they never did go through with it because they had enough radiation from the engines running themselves. Those are the things that, as I say again and again, that you use different type of energy to make electrical energy.
Yep.
And you can't store it. You can use the exhaust to heat the buildings at night, things like that. That's nothing new. It's just knowing it.
Sure.
You
know, I can recall as a youngster, a teenager, working for consumers, going out into the country and taking electricity out into the country. And a good many farms had their own electrical systems, banks of batteries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, so there you say nothing's new. You see wind generators now, and you say, boy, now they're very modern. But how were they doing it back in those days on the farm? Texas probably had a lot of them.
And great distances, too.
Sure.
Well, that's a long story about the REA and distribution. There's a fellow in Canada that dreamed up the idea of using one hot wire with an insulator on the top of a pole and a ground wire down below. I'm talking about distribution, that's in REA. And we had, when I came here, they had some bad advice on their distribution. I told Glenn about this once. Our system here, if they inherited me, five businessmen were appointed to the Board of Public Works. And good, intelligent men.
Uh-huh.
But they weren't engineers. They had some engineering advice, and I know the firm. I won't repeat the name because it's no secret that they're dead and gone anyway.
Uh-huh.
They bought three wire. Now, wait a minute. To begin with, they had a four-wire system. One, two, three, four.
Uh-huh.
Two-phase four-wire, which was very ancient.
Hmm.
The old steam plant. It was 2,400 between each of the two phases. When they bought the new diesels, they bought three-phase three-wire. We inherited that, and we're still living with it now.
Yeah.
And it's not as efficient if they take the fourth wire and put it in the 4160 volts, what we call a Y system,
uh-huh.
with a column neutral. But I never had a chance to get in and the money to get in there and change all that. We're still living with that type of system on that part of the plant,
mm-hmm.
the distribution system. So you're using three wires to pull the same loads. You could have used four wires, and the wires were already up there, but you had to change the connection from a delta to a Y.
I see.
And then use the common low voltage neutral,
mm-hmm.
part of the way if you could use it. It's